We are turning for the second week to the Gemara, the topic, the sugya, that discusses the laws of candle lighting. And we are going to begin with the same source we began with last week, but this time around taken in a very different direction. So as I just share the source sheet. So if you take a look at source number one, what is this first paragraph? As I mentioned last week, but I'll repeat, it's actually a classic question. Why is there no Masechet Chanukah? Why is there no tractate of Gemara? However small, there are very small tractates, there are very small Masechet. Why is there no Masechet of Chanukah? Fine, it's a classic question with lots of interesting answers to discuss another time. But the source is found in the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, just a few pages, just a few dapim, discusses basically everything and anything relating to Chanukah we could want to know, but is a surprisingly rich treasure trove to dive into. And so we read this already last week, but we will read it again today. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes a brighter. Mitzvat Chanukah, ner ish ubeto. The mitzvah, the obligation of what you are supposed to perform each night of Chanukah is to light one candle. On day one, you light one candle, or I'm going to use, as I mentioned last week, because I'm pedantic, it bothers me that I say the word candle when you could be using oils, but be it a ner, which is the more broad term, or candle, you get what I'm saying, but you light one candle. On day, night one, you light one candle, night two, you light one candle, night three, you light one candle, night eight, you light one candle, you get the gist. We discussed last week in tremendous detail. This phrase, ner ish ubeto, is tremendously confusing. And it could imply, as we saw, that it is an obligation you have. Like many mitzvot, you have to hear shofar, you have to wave arba minim, you have to sit in the sukkah, you have to eat matzah. Or alternatively, it could be what we would call a chovat gavra, an obligation upon oneself. Alternatively, it might be a chovat bayit, an obligation upon your house. Mezuzah is the classic example of this. You have a house. And therefore, you must have a mezuzah in your house. You don't have a house, you don't need to put a mezuzah up. So we discussed at length last week that question, but we're going to put all of that aside and make progress. Last week, that meant we got through 7 words of the Gemara, and we were able to talk for over an hour, almost an hour, on just those 7 words. This time around, we're going to go a little further. And then we read the following. V'hamahadrin. There's an even nicer way to perform this mitzvah. Ner l'chol echad ve'echad. You light one flame per person in the house. So a family of 4 on night 1 would light 4. On night 2 would light 4. On night 3 would light 4. On night 8 would light 4. It's an upgrade. Mahadrin, it's not a good translation, but it works. The upgrade is to, you know, light them. Don't just light one per night, like the number of people in your house each night. And then finally, the hamahadrin, min hamahadrin. And the upgrade of upgrades, the most beautiful way of performing it, Beit Shammai Omrim. Beit Shammai says, Yom Rishon Madlik Shmona, you light 8 on the first night, Mikan ve'elach pochet pochet v'holech. After that, you keep on deducting 1 until, you know, it goes 8, 7, 6, you get the gist. Uveit Hilal Omrim, Yom Rishon Madlik Achat, on night 1, you light 1, Mikan ve'elach mosif v'holech. And from that point on, you keep on adding. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4. You get the gist, because this is what everyone does. Fascinating, not for now to talk about. I mentioned this also last week. This is the only place in the entirety of Judaism where the universal custom is to perform the mitzvah in the most mehudar way, in the most beautiful way possible to fulfill. The Mahadrin min HaMahadrin. And to follow the opinion of Beit Hillel, every single person, to my knowledge, basically every Jew, there's probably some Jews somewhere who don't, but basically every single Jew, the dominant custom is night 1, you light 1, night 2, you light 2, night 3, you light 3, there you go. But here's where our question is going to begin. Here is what we are going to occupy ourselves with this evening. I tried to explain it last week to kind of tease it. I will explain it maybe better last week because I confused myself trying to explain it last week. And that's never a good thing. Everyone observes Mahadrin min HaMahadrin. Here's the question. What about this Mahadrin level that I just mentioned? That you light corresponding to the number of people in your house. There is a major question, and I would imagine if we polled people in our community and definitely in the wider Jewish world, you would find that there are people who stack Mahadran Minha Mahadran upon Mahadran, and there are people who don't. To explain what I mean, please God, Hanukkah is now a week from this Thursday, and we are, thank God, a family of four. And what that means is night one of Hanukkah, we will light, we each light our own menorah. Shai's is really foam because he's true, we don't trust him with candles, but you know, just imagine for a second the foam one is actually real. And that means night one, we combine Mahadran and Mahadran and Mahadran. We see Ner Ish Ubeto, the mitzvah, as level one. We see Mahadran as level two. And we see Mahadran and Mahadran as level three. And that's what we do. On night one, we will light four candles. Each of us will have one menorah lit. On night two, we will light eight. On night three, we were like 12. If you looked past our window and you counted the number of flames, you would count the number of nights of Hanukkah that it is multiplied by the number of people in our house. That is what we do. That is what my family does. That is what we do. However, growing up, my family growing up, which was a family of four, we just lit one menorah. That was it. On night one, we lit one candle. On night two, we lit two. On night three, we lit three. There you go. In other words, growing up, we discounted this Mahadran level. We did not consider it conflated within, combined with Mahadran and Mahadran. Now, what we do in my current house, what we do is we combine the two. In other words, there are two ways to view this. We have the mitzvah of Hanukkah, everyone agrees is level one. The question is Mahadran level two? And Mahadran, Minna Mahadran is level three, leading you to have the number of candles corresponding to the people in your house multiplied by the day of Hanukkah that it is, or the other way around, the day of Hanukkah that it is multiplied, that's the same, whatever, you get what I'm saying? Or alternatively, do we say mitzvah Hanukkah is level one? And then there are two options for level two. One option, which no one does, is just the Mahadran. Light the number of flames, candles corresponding to the people in your house every night consistently. No one, to my knowledge, no family of four lights four every single night consistently. But what some people do is they do the other option, which is Mahadran Minna Mahadran is just an upgrade on Mitzvah Hanukkah. And so there is one menorah, regardless of how many people are in the household, and they do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That is the difference. And that is our central question tonight. Not necessarily which one is correct, because as we're going to see, both are compelling understandings of this Gemara. But what is the reason for different people doing different things? Before we start figuring that out, and if you're still slightly confused by my attempts to explain this, as we read more sources, it will become clearer. But before we get there, we should actually read the continuation of the Gemara, because it's gonna be important shortly. So last week at this point, we stopped with the Gemara and we already moved to commentators and other sources. But there's actually a few more lines of Gemara that are actually relevant to this discussion. Because the Gemara, as we are going to see, quotes Ula, who's one of the major rabbinic figures of the Gemara, who is actually going to talk about a debate over why did Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai disagree? What was the source of their disagreement? Remember, we just read, Beit Shammai says you go 8 down to 1, whereas Beit Hillel says you go 1 up to 8. That is that there is a debate, but we don't know what the reason is. And thus, if you read the second paragraph of source number 1, Amar Ula, Pligiba, Tre Amorai B'Ma'arva. There were two Amoraim, two rabbis in the West, in other words, in the land of Israel. They disagreed about what was the reason behind Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel's disagreement. Rebbe Yossi bar Avin for Rebbe Yossi bar Zvida. So we have these two Rebbe Yossis, different people. One is the son of Avin, one is the son of Zvida. And he goes on to explain what they disagreed about. Chad Amar, one of them said, and this is a complete aside, but just to pause here because this is a fun fact. Not necessarily a fact, but a good rule to know. Usually, the Gemara, kind of the bread and butter of the Gemara, is debates. You know, two rabbis disagree, and usually it tells you who disagrees where. It's not just Rav and Shmuel disagree, but Rav said this, Shmuel said this. Rava said this, Rava said this, Abaye said this. Every so often, in fact, not every so often, you will often find that it doesn't actually name who said which opinion. It will sometimes resort to, like we have here, Chad Amar. One of them said this, the other said this, but it doesn't name which one. And what you'll find more often than not is it's because the two rabbis disagreeing have very similar names. And what you have to remember is while we read the Gemara as a text, as a written text, it was originally oral. In other words, Ula remembers that there were two rabbis, well-known rabbis, both Rabbi Yossi's, who disagreed about this, but he doesn't remember which one said which. Everyone just knows Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yossi disagreed. And so that's why the Gemara says, Chad Amar, one of them said, because we don't quite remember. You'll see this a lot. Often the Gemara, it can be sometimes painful, seems to take great lengths to try to clarify who said what. And often you'll see it's the names are very similar, and that's what's causing the confusion. But anyway, Chad Amar, Taima de Beit Shammai, Keneged Yamim HaNichnasim. The reason Beit Shammai says you go from 8 down to 1 is because you're counting the remaining nights of Hanukkah. On the first night, there are 8 nights of Hanukkah remaining, so you light 8 candles. On the second night of Hanukkah, there are 7 nights of Hanukkah remaining, so you light 7. You get the idea. On the last night of Hanukkah, on the 8th night of Hanukkah, there's 1 night left, 1 day left, boom, that's why you light 1. The time at the Beit Hillel, Keneged Yamim HaYotzein. However, Hillel says, no, you're counting the days already observed, or already to be observed. So on night one, you've only observed really one night, not even, but you know, you're observing one day. By night two, you're observing 2 days, etc., etc. That's one view. V'chad Amar, Taima de Beit Shammai, Keneged Hore Hachag. I accidentally turned off my screen. I don't know if other people lost the Zoom also, or if it was just me, but we're back now. I pressed the wrong button on my monitor, but we're all good. The other reason, Chad Amar, we're now on the second to last line of the second paragraph. Time out the Beit Shammai Keneged Pare Hachag. Why does Shammai say you decrease the number of candles? To correspond to the number of bulls that were offered on the festival of Sukkot. Hold on a second. What? So on Sukkot, on the first day of Sukkot, there were 13 bulls offered. On the second day, 12. On the third day, 11. On the fourth, you get the idea. They decreased. Says Beit Shammai, just as they decreased by one bull in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple on Sukkot, so too you decrease a candle on Hanukkah. Now I know what you're thinking. Where did that come from? Now, the truth is, there is a rule, I think I've said maybe at some point already between Mincha Ma'ariv, whenever we come across something in Chazal that seems absolutely crazy, it's always good to check, is it actually because they're crazy? Or is there something we are missing? And now is not the time to go into tremendous detail. Please, God, another Hanukkah, we will talk about this in greater detail. The connection between Sukkot and Hanukkah is surprisingly strong. And part of it is to do with when the Chashmonaim were victorious. And it's got all the mixes of a good story. There's calendrical confusion. They don't know which they lost kind of track of the calendar. That used to be a thing that was a risk. And so what they had as the month of Kislev might actually have been the month of Tishrei. And there's a lot to argue that the original Hanukkah was actually basically Sukkot finally celebrated. So the link between, and Beit Shammai, who is living turn of the common era. So he's less than 200 years after the story of Hanukkah. If Beit Shammai are preserving a tradition from Shammai, it's not implausible that he would have some, there would be some institutional memory, some passed down received knowledge of the connection of Hanukkah to Sukkot. So that Beit Shammai connects Hanukkah candles to the Korbanot, the sacrifices brought on Sukkot, is not as crazy as it sounds. But that's the other reason for Beit Shammai. The time of the Beit Hillel, the Ma'alin Bakodesh Ve'ein Moriden. And the reason behind Beit Hillel is simply we always want to increase in Kedusha. We want to increase the holiness. And we never want to decrease. So on night one, you light one candle, you've performed a mitzvah. So now you want to maybe build some momentum. The drasha writes itself. You want to keep on increasing the kedusha. So now light two, and now you've lit in two, keep increasing it even more. Light three, there you go. It's the ma'alin ba'kodesh ve'ein moridin. In other words, the two Rebbe Yossis here disagree as to whether Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, the source of their view 8 to 1 or 1 to 8, is technical. It's about the number of days, one way or another, or if it's thematic. There is some broader message that the candles are supposed to convey, whether it's the link to Sukkot in some way or another, or whether it's this idea of increasing Kedusha. That's what the two Rebbe Yossis are disagreeing about. Did Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel think lighting Neirot Chanukah was a technical thing to do with the number of days? Or was it thematic? Is the point to express some greater theme, some greater idea that's happening on Chanukah? And then there's finally one more paragraph. We get a story. Story time is always fun. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So it's quoted in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Shnei Zakenim Hayu Bet Sidon. There were two elders, and they lived in this place, Sidon, Sidon. Echad asa kaveit Shammai, ve'echad asa kadivrei Beit Hillel. One followed the view of Shammai, and one followed the view of Beit Hillel. So obviously this was a time in the Jewish world where they hadn't quite figured out that we're all basically going to follow Beit Hillel. Zen notin ta'am lidvarov, keneged parei hachag. Vezen notin ta'am lidvarov, dema'alin bakodesh ve'in moridin. When they asked them, okay, two elders, why do you follow Shammai? Why do you follow Hillel? Their reason was the thematic one. The one who followed Shammai was because he was trying to make his candles mirror the Porei Hachag, the balls that were offered on Sukkot. And the guy who was following Hillel was doing this idea of we increase Kedusha and we don't decrease it. So we have the thematic versus the technical. The technical is to do with the number of days of Chanukah. The thematic is this greater theme. And then we actually get this story that says that these two elders, they intentionally followed the thematic. Put these two paragraphs aside for now. We will come back to them. They are very important. And let's get back to our question. When it comes to Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin, does it stack on top of Mahadrin or not? Are you supposed to light on night one the number of candles per people in your home, and on night two double it, and on night three triple it, and on night four quadruple it? You get the idea. Or are you just supposed to do one on night one, two on night two, three on night three? Is Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin an upgrade on Mahadrin, or is it an upgrade on just the mitzvah itself of one each night? So first, we look at Rambam. We already saw Rambam last week. We saw the first half of it. And we're going to finish it. As I mentioned last week, this Rambam is basically a rewriting, in his own words, of the first paragraph of the Gemara we just read, the first paragraph of source number one. Kama neirot hu madlik b'chanukah? How many lights should you light on Chanukah? Mitzvata sheyichya kol bayit uvayit madlik ner echad. Every house should have one. This last week, we fixated on as a source that it's an obligation on your home, not on yourself. Regardless of how many people are in your house, the fundamental mitzvah, just one every night. I'm loving this translation of hidor as upgrade, even though you want to beautify it, you want to upgrade the mitzvah. Madlik neirot kaminyan anshei habayit ner lochal echad ve'echad bein anashim bein nashim. You know, however many are in your house, that's what you do every single night. You want to upgrade it even more. The Isa mitzvah min hamuvchar, and perform the mitzvah in its choicest sense. Madlik ner lechol echad balayla harishon. On the first night, you light per the number of people in your house. Umosif v'holich b'chol layla v'layla ner echad. And then each night, you keep on adding. In other words, says Rambam, Mahadrin min haMahadrin is an upgrade on Mahadrin. What we do in my house, where each of us lights Neirot Chanukah, or let me rephrase that slightly, where there are Neirot Chanukah for each of us in the house, that, says Rambam, is the correct fulfillment of Mahadrin and Minamahadrin. One important note, just to make at this point, because it's a very important note, and otherwise it will make everything else somewhat confusing. right now, when you are picturing lighting Hanukkah candles, you are picturing a menorah. There isn't one behind me yet. Ira's been playing with it, and it's now basically a toy for him. So it's somewhere in the house. But you're picturing lighting a menorah. You can't help it. What you should actually picture is just distinct flames. You see this in Israel, in yeshiva, it was very popular. What, you know, people would do is you get like shot glasses, fill them with oil, stick a wick in it, and you just line up the shot glasses, boom. You have you don't need a fancy candelabra, menorah, it doesn't need to look like a choo-choo train, it doesn't need to look like whatever it looks like, it doesn't need to be any of that, you just need flames lit. Think of that, because it's very important. Especially for what we're about to read, but picture that. Don't picture a menorah. So that's why when I just said what we do in our house, ignore the form it takes, but we are lighting the number of candles per the family multiplied by the night of Hanukkah that it is. That's what Rambam says you do. Now let's take a look at Tosafot. And Tosafot begins by, and all we're going to read of the Tosafot, sorry, is the quoting of the Ri, and Rav Yitzchak ben Shmuel, who was the great-grandson of Rashi, I mentioned last week, the Tosafot are an entire school of thinkers, who lived predominantly in France and Germany, and the commentary of Tosafot is an edited work itself, which cites many people. It's somewhat painful sometimes to read because of how it was edited. Anyway, Tosafot say the following. Nir el Ri. The Beit Shammai u'Beit Hillel laikaimi, ela aner ish u'Beito. That when Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were talking about their position, they were only ever talking about upgrading the first level of the mitzvah. Shekein yesh yoter hida. Because this is what brings the greater hidor, this is what brings the greater beautification of the mitzvah. De'ika hichra. Because when you either add or detract, it is very clear shehu keneged yamim hanichnasim or hayotzim. The whole point of candle lighting, says Tosfot, is we want it to be clear what basically the dates. That's the point. Aval im osa ner lechol echad. If you're going to do this whole thing where you're doing it per the number of people in your house, afilu Yosef mekan ve'elech, even if you're going to, you know, continue to add to it, leka hichra, that you have no way of knowing what day of Hanukkah it is, sheyisavru shekach yesh b'nei adam b'bayit, because you might just think that's how many people are in the house. Let me explain what Tosafot's complaint is. Imagine you walk past a house a week from now, or at some point during Hanukkah, and you see a lot of flames outside, and you count, and you count 20 flames burning. There are multiple options. It could be night five, and you're walking past the house of a family of four. It could be night four, and you're walking past a family of five. Not necessarily in our community, but maybe it's a family of 10 and it's night two. I have a friend. He's actually one of 13 children. His wife is one of 18 children. So if they lit on night one, they would have ostensibly in her family growing up lit 20 lights. Maybe you're just walking past her, you know, her parents' home when they were growing up, and these 20 flames is actually night one, says Tosafot. There is no, if you stack Mahadrin and Mahadrin on top of Mahadrin, it just leads to chaos. There is no way of knowing what night of Hanukkah it is, whatsoever. Tosafot clearly sees the point of Hanukkah lighting, and this is something we will come back to, as technical. It's supposed to, in some way or another, telegraph what night of Hanukkah it is. And so if all you are going to do is multiply the nights of Hanukkah by the number of people in your house, no one will have a clue what's going on. You will confuse everyone. People will walk past your house, they'll see 20 lights, and they won't know what to make of it. They won't have a clue anymore. They'll no longer remember what night of Hanukkah it is. They'll be thrown into a state of confusion. Says Tosafot, it cannot be that this is what Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel intended. You also see in his source what he says is he states the reason he thinks Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel followed what they followed, which is it's all to do with, you know, Keneged Yamim HaNichnosim or HaYotim. It's all about the days. The first reason offered by the Rebbe Yossis, one of the Rebbe Yossis, as to what Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel disagreed on, says Tosafot, Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin, only upgrades Ner Ish Ubeto. The correct thing to do, says Tosafot, is you light, regardless of how many people are in your house, one on night one, two on night two, three on night three, there you go. In other words, what we do now, Ruthie, myself, and our kids, is what Rambam thinks you should do. But what we did with my parents growing up, where we just lit, you know, one through eight and that was it, that is what Tosafot says you should do. Both are equally legitimate understandings of the Gemara here, but these are the two different opinions. One says, Mahadrin mina Mahadrin, upgrades Mahadrin. The other says, no, it just upgrades the mitzvah itself. So there are a few interesting things to talk about. The first, which takes us on somewhat of an interesting tangent, but nonetheless, is the Shulchan Aruch. So Rav Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch, source number four in the Ramah, takes sides in this debate. Says the Shulchan Aruch, source number four, Rav Yosef Karo, Kama Neirot Madlik, how many lights do you light on Chanukah? Balayla HaRishon, Madlik Echad, you light one, Mikan Ve'ilech Mosif, V'holech Echad B'chol Laila, Ad Shebeleil HaAcharon, Yushmona, you light one on the first night, then two, then three, until the final night, you've lit eight. V'afilu Im Rabim B'nei HaBayit, and even if there's a ton of people in your house, Lo Yadliku Yaita, you don't light anymore. In other words, Shulchan Aruch follows Tosafot. The Mahadrin and Mahadrin is only an upgrade on the basic level of the mitzvah. And then the Ramah adds in the second paragraph, Rabbi Moshe Isselis, the defining rabbi of Ashkenazi Jewry, V'yesh Omrin, D'chol Echad Mibnei Habayit Yadlik, and there are those who say that every single person should light, and then it's probably, he did probably not write Rambam, it's the editors, V'chein HaMinhag Pashut, and this is indeed the custom we do, and we're going to pause the Ramah there for now, because something interesting just happened with what we read. And it's made explicit by the Be'er Hativ. There's actually Be'er Hativ is on all the sections of the Shulchan Aruch, all four, but on Orach Chaim, which is what we are in, and Evan HaEzer, both are written by the same guy. Rabbi Yehuda ben Shimon Ashkenazi is an 18th century German rabbi. The other two Be'er Hativs are written by another guy. But he notes the following. V'zeh chidush, something astounding, something novel here. Shehasfardim nohagim katosvot. That here in the Shulchan Aruch, who's the defining rabbi of Sfardi Jewry, they follow Tosafot, these Ashkenazi rabbis from France and Germany. Via Ashkenazim Karambam, and the Ashkenazim says, the Ramah, you follow Rambam. Rambam was Taimani, he was Yemenite. He tends to be far stronger a source for Sfardi Jews. And we don't find this, says the Be'er Hativ, in any other place. He argues there's no other place you will ever find where Sfardim follow the traditional Ashkenazi authorities and Ashkenazim follow the traditional Sfardi authorities. Now, I didn't look this up, but I would bet a good amount of money that this is not the only place. But it's fascinating nonetheless, because Shulchan Aruch almost always follows the three big Sfardi Rishonim, the three big Sfardi early medieval authorities, Rambam, Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, who we'll come back to shortly, and Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, who's actually a hybrid. He started in the Sfardi world and then, no, I think it's the other way around. He moved from one to the other. But either way, Shulchan Aruch follows those. Ramah usually follows Ashkenazi rabbis. He lived in Warsaw. Rav Yosef Karo lived in Israel, in Tzfat. Rav Moshe Isselis lived in Warsaw, and he follows... He actually tends to follow a group of later Rishonim, later medieval authorities who were very popular in the Ashkenazi world. It's very unusual that we have this, where Sfardim follow the Ashkenazi tradition, quote unquote, while Ashkenazim follow the Sfardi tradition, quote unquote. So the truth is, this might not be as striking as we think. This what I'm about to draw your attention to was drawn to my attention by this wonderful Sefer, which is called Megillat Sefer. Megillat Sefer is written by, I wrote it down, Rabbi Uriel Eisenthal, who's some to my eyes, some random rabbi in Israel. But he's the author of the Sfarim called Megillat Sefer. The reason I know about them is because when I was in YU, when I was in Smicha, and we learned Issa V'Heta, we learned Kashrut, I learned it with Rabbi Ezra Schwartz, one of the Rosh Yeshiva, and he, for some reason, had stumbled across the Sefer and was in love with it. Barely a week went by when he wouldn't quote Megillat Sefer, offering some wonderful insight that just explained everything. And it was just, his enthusiasm remained with me, that just like, whenever I have an opportunity, I'm like, I should see if Megillat Sefer says something about that. And thank God, because I'm a YU alum, I have access to Otzar HaChochma, which is this digitized library of Sfarim that otherwise costs thousands of dollars, but thank God YU covers it. And Megillat Sefer's on there. And I read Megillat Sefer on this topic, and it was wonderful. And in particular, he points out here that Be'er Hativ's astonishment that Rama's following Rambam might not actually be as crazy as we think, because the Rama explains why his view is what it is. And this is found source number 6 in the Darchei Moshe. So just to explain, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama, they were not, Rama's the acronym for his name, he actually called it the Mapa, his gloss on the Shulchan Aruch, they were not the important halachic sfarim written by Rabbi Yosef Karo and Rabbi Moshe Isserles. Their actual magnum opuses, opi, their actual major works were lengthy, lengthy commentaries on the Arba Aturim, which was another popular halachic work. And Rav Yosef Karo wrote the Beit Yosef, and Rav Moshe Isserles wrote the Darchei Moshe. Both of them, Rav Moshe Isserles did it because of Rav Yosef Karo. The story about how these works came to be is fascinating. We can talk about it another time. But basically, what they did was they basically condensed their very lengthy comments in the Beit Yosef and Darchei Moshe into kind of the spark notes, the cribbed version that became the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramaz glosses. But in the Darchei Moshe, he often, Rabbi Moshe Isserles expands on, or it's his more expansive view from which on. And in source number 6, the Rabbi Moshe Isserles explains why he follows Rambam here. And he actually quotes the Maharat mi Prague, Avraham Kara of Prague, the cut of Maharat mi Prague, the Ledidan Shemadliku Bifnim, that nowadays we light indoors. The Yodein Bavayit, Kama B'nei Adam Bavayit, and therefore everyone knows how many people are in the house. No one's really seeing Hanukkah candles. The Leikalamichash Shama Yomu Kach B'nei Adam Him Bavayit. And therefore, no one's going to be thrown into this confusion, which was such the fear of Tosafot. If no one's seeing the Hanukkah candles, I'm not sure why they basically did it indoors, why no one was really seeing it. But there you go. But basically, no one's worried. No one's fearful of this concern of Tosafot that it's just going to lead to mass confusion. And thus, even Tosafot would say our practice is correct. So Rama does not follow Rambam because he had this weird moment one day where he woke up, and even though he was Ashkenazi, he felt compelled to follow the traditional Sephardi authority. No, it's because he doesn't think Tosafot's fear applies here. Tosafot's concern, Tosafot's reason for not stacking Mahadrin min Mahadrin upon Mahadrin, Rama doesn't think is applicable. That's why he says follow Rambam. Not because he rejects Tosafot, but he just thinks Tosafot doesn't apply. And that is a subtle difference, but a significant one. However, that doesn't actually solve everything for a couple of reasons. It doesn't explain why Rav Yosef Karo follows Tosafot. And also, remember, I left off a small bit of the Rama from earlier. I'm scrolling up to source number 4 again. In the second to last line of source number 4, the Rama adds, V'yisharu liten kol echad ve'echad neirotav b'makom meyuchat. And everyone doing this, everyone doing the number per your house, should make sure that every person lights in a different location. Kadesha yihye heker, kama neirot madligen, so that it's known how many lights have been lit. In other words, says Rama, we should be concerned for Tosafot. There's just another way to get around it. Light in a different window. If you walk, Tosafot's fear is you walk past a house and you see in one window 20 flames and you're thrown into a fit of confusion. What if you walk past a house And you see in one window, five lights. In another window, five lights. In another window, five lights. In another window, five lights. You know, there are four people in the house and it is night five. There you go. Or nowadays, even simpler, you walk past and you see a big menorah with five lights in it, a small menorah with five lights in it, a choo-choo train menorah with five lights in it, and a foam menorah with five foam candles in it. And then you know, oh, this is a family of four with definitely some, we don't actually have a choo-choo train menorah, but nonetheless, you know, this is a family of four. Someone isn't allowed to play with fire, but it's night five. Basically, says Rama, we should be concerned for this confusion. Rama actually does seem to be worried about the same concern as Tosafot. He just has a way around it. Just make it more obvious, make it clearer. Make it so that you're lighting in a distinct location so that no one's going to be thrown into this confusion. So we've seen that there is a very strong basis for both lighting flames according to both the day of Hanukkah and the number of people in your house, and also a very strong basis for only lighting per the night of Hanukkah. And fascinatingly, Rama and Rav Yosef Karo go against all of their halachic instincts. They root for the other team. For some reason, they are compelled to do this. Why? What's going on here? So again, I credit Megillat Sefer with this, but it's actually the Vilna Gaon who makes this argument. And to this first, we'll scroll back up. I realize that there's always a bit of delay between my scrolling and everyone else's, so I'll wait a couple more seconds. You remember what we started with, this debate between the two Rebbe Yossis in the middle paragraph. Whether the Beit Shammai Beit Hillel disagreement is technical. You want to know, you want to be able to reveal in some way or another how many days it is, or whether it's thematic, whether it's the bowls of Sukkot according to Beit Shammai, or the increasing in Kedusha and holiness and never decreasing it according to Beit Hillel. And says the Vilna Gaon, this debate, which one you end up reading, which one of the two Rebbe Yossis you think is correct in explaining the disagreement between Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, explains everything else. If the debate between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is Keneged Yamim HaNichnosin and Keneged Yamim HaYotzeim, because Beit Shammai wanted to know how many days were remaining and Beit Hillel wanted to count how many days had already elapsed, do you know what's really, really important? What's definitionally important? Being able to very clearly determine what night of Hanukkah it is. What is Tosafot's concern? Source number three. The magic words are de'ika hichra and leika hichra. There is a heka. Heka here is the magic word. Heka means the ability to distinguish, to tell clearly. A heka is a very visible signal, a very clear indication as to the status of something. Tosafot is obsessed with this notion of heka to the point that he thinks it's impossible for Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin to upgrade on Mahadrin, because it would make no sense. It would be too hard to tell what night of Hanukkah it is. In other words, as Tosafot himself says, the whole point of Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, the whole point of following Beit Hillel is to make it clear what night of Hanukkah it is. That was always what Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were arguing about. And I didn't put on the sheet, but I mentioned the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo. His original work is the Beit Yosef. So if you look at the Beit Yosef on this topic, he basically says that the reason he doesn't like the stacking is because you're not making it clear which night of Hanukkah it is. That it actually reduces the hiddur to introduce this confusion. In other words, it's all about the heka. It's all about being able to clearly understand and realize that it is the night of Hanukkah, that according to Tosafot, And according to Rav Yosef Karo, and the Rama in truth acknowledges this somewhat, he hedges his bets and he thinks this is still an important component, this crucial debate between the two Rebbe Yossis, the Rebbe Yossi who said Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, Mahadrin and Minamahadrin, is all about letting it be known what night of Chanukah it is. The mitzvah we perform on Chanukah is all about knowing what night of Chanukah it is. Then it makes no sense to have anything more than 1 through 8. Night 1, you have 1. Night 2, you have 2. Night 2. The whole point, says Tosavot. The whole point, says the Shulchan Aruch. The whole point, says one of the Rebbe Yossis. Why am I doing Mahadrin and Min Mahadrin? What am I doing? So that when you walk past my house and you see the number of flames in my window, you know what night of Chanukah it is. That's the point. That's the purpose of Mahadrin, Min Mahadrin. It's the equivalent of a giant lawn sign. Today, tonight is night, you know, what of Chanukah. That's its point. That's its purpose. What about Rambam? Very simple. Rambam doesn't care about knowing what night of Chanukah it is, because Rambam thinks there's a different purpose to this debate between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, and it's the thematic one. It's about Keneged Parei HaChag. It's about the bowls of Sukkot, or alternatively, because we follow Beit Hillel, the whole point is being Ma'alin Bakodesh, the Ein Moridin. It's just about that. So you walk past my house, and if I was following Beit Shammai, it doesn't matter that I went from 25 lights to 20 between two nights. Who cares? Because the bowls of Sukkot don't even correspond. It wasn't 8, 7, 6. It was 13, 12, 11. That doesn't correspond either. It's just all about reducing. Or in the case of Hillel, which is what we follow, it doesn't matter how many candles you see, only that as you walk past my house, and I know some people are actually have walking routes and they walk past my house because I see you and I'm looking out of my window. Hi, by the way, when you walk past. But all that matters is you walk past my house and you saw on one night a certain number of candles, and you walk past the next night and there's a lot more. Because what's important is the Ma'alin Bakodesh Ve'in Moridin, that we increase the Kedusha and we never decrease it, says the Bi'or HaGra, is why Rambam thinks Mahadrin and Minamahadrin stacks on top of Mahadrin. He has no concern. He has no care about knowing what night of Chanukah it is. It's just about increasing the Kedusha. It's about this thematic reason behind Chanukah and nothing to do with the technical reason. Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, Mahadrin and Minamahadrin is about increasing the theme of Chanukah, increasing this thematic element and nothing to do with notifying people of what day. And the truth is that while there is no explicit indication of this in Rambam, there is a very clear indication that at least another major rabbinic figure believed this, and that is the Rif. I'm going to scroll to source 7. Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, one of the earliest Rishonim we had. He died in 1103. He lived in Algeria. And he is one of the original Rishonim. He is one of the first major rabbinic figures to essentially do something with the Gemara and turn it into a practical code. And what he does, by the way, is astounding. And it's important. And whenever I end up quoting the Rif, I will always say this, because the Rif is horribly confusing to understand until you know what he's doing. This is what the Rif does. The Rif rewrote the Gemara. He just like opened the Gemara and he started writing it himself. However, sometimes he summarizes, but he also just deletes anything he doesn't think is significant. That's how the Rif works. So you'll look at the top of source number 7, you will see that while our Gemara was Daf Chaf Aleph, was page 21 of Masechet Shabbat, we are in page 9 of the Rif. The Rif had his own pagination because that's how much he chops out. Think about it, 21 pages, he did in 9, you can imagine a lot is missing. And the really important thing to know is that the Rif never includes stories, because stories have zero halachic value. Think of the classic Gemara story. Rava was once on a lake and a giant dragon tried to eat him, and then he started juggling and huzzah, and on that day something good happened. The classic Agarata, that's very important. I don't mean to mock it with that very dumb example I brought, but Rif never includes stories because stories have zero halachic value. Take a look at source 7. So first we have, he literally just rewrites what we've already seen now 1,000 times, the Gemara. Mitzvah ner Chanukah, ner ishu beito, v'hamahadrin ner lochal echad v'echad, v'hamahadrin men hamahadrin, beit Shammai oimrim, yom rishon madlik shmona, mikan v'eilech pochet v'cholech, beit Hillel oimrim, yom rishon madlik achad, mikan v'eilech mosif v'holech. That's just what we already read, the first paragraph of source number one. There you go. And then he summarizes the two Rebbe Yossi's disagreement. Ta'amayhu the Beit Shammai keneged pari ha'chag. And the reason Beit Shammai said what he said was to follow the decreasing number of bulls of Sukkot. Inami keneged yamim ha'nichnasim. Alternatively, it was to count the number of days remaining. V'ta'amayhu the Beit Hillel keneged yamim ha'yotzin. And according to, and the reason for Beit Hillel was to count how many days had passed. And others say it was to increase the Kedusha and never decrease it. That's just classic riff. Just read what was our middle paragraph. The two Rebbe Yossis, he cuts to the chase. Who cares which of the Rebbe Yossis said it? Who cared where they lived? Who cared who repeated that statement? None of these things are important. All that's important is there is a debate over what was the rationale behind Beit Shammai and what was the rationale about Beit Hillel. And then he records a story. But the riff never records stories. The first thing the riff deletes is a story. And yet, what do we read in the riff? Amar Rabba Bar Rachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Shnei Zekenim Hayu Bet Sinan. We get the whole story. There were these two elders in Sinan. Echad Asei Kedivri Beit Shammai, Ve'echad Asei Kedivri Beit Hillel. One followed Beit Shammai, one followed Beit Hillel. Zeh Noitein Natam, Noitein Tam Lidvarav Keneged Pari HaChag. Vezeh Noitein Tam Lidvarav Mishamalin Bakadosh V'Laimar. Read it. He quotes, the riff quotes this story that justifies that the correct interpretation of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is nothing to do with the technical and everything to do with the thematic. In other words, the riff very clearly believes that the point of Mahadrin and Mahadrin is thematic. The whole purpose is to correspond to the number of bulls that were offered on different days of Sukkot, according to Beit Shammai, and to, or alternatively, to increase the holiness, which is Beit Hillel. This, says the Vilna Gaon, is the core distinction at the heart of the mitzvah of Mahadrin and Mahadrin. This is what leads to these differing views. If you think the point is technical, if the whole point of Mahadrin and Mahadrin is to notify people on what day of the week it is, it's got to be clear. You can't eat your cake and have it too. You can't do Mahadrin and Mahadrin and Mahadrin. It would make no sense. But if your purpose is solely thematic, if your purpose is to speak to this broader theme, this broader idea of Chanukah, which is to be Ma'alin Bakodesh Velo Moridin, then knock yourselves out. Light as many candles as you, well, don't actually light as many candles as you want. That would completely defeat the purpose. But light as many as correspond to the number of people in your household, increasing it per day. There you go. Obviously, this debate has some very clear and obvious practical ramifications. What do you do on Chanukah? Do you light just one menorah, regardless of how many people are in your family? Or does every single person in the family, is there a menorah for each of them? That's the obvious, that was what we began with. That's the obvious practical difference. If you follow Rambam, then yeah, you'd have one per every person following Rama. If you follow Tosafot and if you follow Rav Yosef Karo, then you'd only light one. And what's interesting is because usually if it was Rambam and Rav Yosef Karo said one thing and Tosafot and Rama both said a different thing, but the same, you know, but a different thing to the others, then we'd have an Ashkenazi-Sephardi divide. But because you have Ashkenazim and Sephardim combining in both directions, it leads to, I'd argue, a lot more variance in the Orthodox community with different people doing different things depending on this. The other obvious practical ramification is how concerned do you need to be about distinction? If you did what they sometimes do, what I've seen in Israel and Yeshiva, and I'm sure some people do it, if you do the shot glass style, with, you know, your oil and your wick inside, which is a perfectly kosher menorah, providing it's all on one level, yada, 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 and fits some of the other laws of lighting a menorah, but fundamentally is a perfectly acceptable way to light a menorah. Do you need to be concerned if you are having, if multiple people are using that same method? Do you need to make sure it's very clear and obvious the differences between them and Norat, well, that's going to be impacted on again if you're sympathetic towards Tosafot. Ramar is sympathetic towards Tosafot, or you follow Tosafot, then your shot glasses would have to be in different windows. They'd have to be clearly delineated on different levels, something to make it clear and obvious that different people have lit these. But if you don't care at all, who cares if you have 20 shot glasses lit in a row and no one can tell because of that one night of Hanukkah it is? It makes no difference. There's a third, thank God, less practical question for nowadays, but was probably more realistic in other times. And it's a question raised by the Beit HaLevi. The Beit HaLevi was Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. He is the great-grandfather of the Rav. Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the 20th century Rav Soloveitchik, was named after his great-grandfather, the 20th century one, you know, basically guiding light and forger of American modern orthodoxy, not that guy, the one who lived in 19th century Russia, his great-grandfather, the Beit HaLevi, who's really the founder of the kind of the Torah dynasty that would emerge with the Soloveitchik name. He raises the following. Again, nowadays it's more a thought experiment, but unfortunately there were definitely times when it wasn't, which is, imagine the following. You're living alone. You can think of the scenario if you're not living alone, but it's just easier to imagine just one person here. On night one, you have enough oil to light, you know, one candle. Fine. On night two, you have enough to light two. Now it's night three, and you realize you don't have enough oil left to light three flames, to fuel three flames. Again, back in the day, oil was probably more expensive. People were poorer. You couldn't just go, and at some point, there's a box of Hanukkah candles, and I ordered from Amazon little oils. You couldn't do that back in the day. So you can't light three candles. It's not possible to. What do you do? You have two options. There's enough fuel to light two, but not enough to light three, and it's night three. One option is just light one. The other option is you could still light two flames also on night three. The entire solution you would choose would depend on how you view the status of Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin. If the whole point of Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin is what Tosafot said, and it's all about making it very clear what night of Hanukkah it is, then you don't light two flames on the third night of Hanukkah. You just light one, because someone who walked past your house and just saw one flame would think that person's just fulfilling the basic mitzvah of Nerish Ubetah. You are excluded from fulfilling Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin. It's impossible to fulfill it, says Tosafot, because the whole point of Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin is to make it very obvious and very clear what night of Hanukkah it is. And if you can't light three lights on Hanukkah, that gate, that path is shut off to you, and you can only fulfill the basic mitzvah. But if Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin is all about this thematic value of Hanukkah, and it's about being ma'alin bakodesh ve'in morid, and that we increase kedusha and we never decrease, well, you can't increase the kedusha, but you can at least keep it at stasis. You don't decrease. You light two again on the third night, so that you don't decrease the kedusha in your home. If the point is thematic, you light two on the third night because that's all you can do to keep the kedusha at the same level. But if the point is technical, you only light one because you left that world of being able to telegraph the night of Hanukkah it was, which, says Tosafot, is the whole point of Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin. Take a look at source number 8, which is the Mishnah Brura, who presents this scenario. And he says the following. Ve'im yesh lo teisha neirot. Imagine you have 9 candles for the whole of Hanukkah. Yadlik b'leil sheni shtei neirot. That you light 1 through 8, but on the second night, light 2. You get one shot at Mahadrin and Mina Mahadrin and just do it for that night. And afterwards, you leave the world of Mahadrin and Mina Mahadrin and you just light one for each and every night following. Ve'im yeshla eser, but if you have eser neirot, if you have asara neirot, if you have 10 candles, af al pichein lo yadlik rak beleil sheni shtayim, only light 2 on the second night. Uvelel shlishi lo yadlik shtayim rak achat. Don't light two, light one. The Mishnah Berurah codifies the Beit HaLevi's scenario, the Beit Halevi's issue here. And the Mishnah Berurah says, it seems very clear what we can derive from Mishnah Berurah's words here, that he thinks the point of candle lighting, Mahadrin min Mahadrin, is to telegraph the night of Hanukkah that it is. And nothing to do with the thematic idea of being Ma'al in Bakodesh. If he thought it was about being, at least keeping Kedusha in stasis, then on the third night, you'd still light two flames. But no, don't bother, he says. Let that candle just fall to the wayside. Don't bother using it. Because the whole idea is technical. And this is where we'll leave off for tonight. I will stop the show at this point. If anyone has any questions, now is the time to either raise your hand, get my attention, or type in the chat. But what we will leave off for tonight is with this debate over Mahadrin and Mahadrin, which is one of the most practical debates in Halacha that we confront. And again, different people, I'm sure on this Zoom call, do different things. Ultimately, it's about is the purpose of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, is it to telegraph the night of Hanukkah that it is? Or is it simply to have this thematic value of increasing in Kedusha? If it's all about telegraphing, then you have to be very, very careful, at the very least, about how you light your Nerot Hanukkah so that it's obvious and clear what night of Hanukkah it is. That's the supreme value. And ideally, says Tosafot, don't light any more than one set for the whole of Hanukkah. However, if you think the value is thematic, if you think the whole point of lighting Nerot Hanukkah is to increase the Kedusha every night of Hanukkah, then it would not matter how many you would light.